is a production of Cornell University.
I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. I don't have my gavel, so I'm going to be using a cell phone for that purpose for today. Well, it's kind of salty right now. Okay, so this is our first meeting of the spring semester, January 26th. I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. So first on the agenda is roll call of the voting members. For physical sciences, Jeffrey. I'm here, and Catherine unfortunately couldn't make it today, but we do still have an executive vice president here. Humanities, Jesse. Christine. Social sciences, William Nicholson. Todd informed me he would not be able to be here. Lynn. Professional schools, John. Alexander. Okay. Kara.
Yeah.
Biological sciences, Cora. And B.B. Finley. And Ian. Finally, masters, Ashley. And Haynes. Oh. Okay. Good. Next will be approval of the minutes from December 1st. Are there any corrections to make to the minutes? All right. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Okay. Is there a second? All right. I ask for unanimous consent to approve the minutes. As a reminder, unanimous consent simply means we vote by not saying no. So, are there any opposed to approving the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved as written. Next on the agenda will be a GPCI Working Group update. So, as you all probably know, we passed a resolution presenting the GPCI as a sort of five-year plan for the graduate schools. This is about 2 years ago now. And so we thought it was about time to hear some updates from the working groups. So throughout the semester, we'll be bringing in the working groups two at a time to present to us what they've accomplished so far, what they're looking to work on, and it's also an opportunity for us all to provide feedback to them. So first up, we will have Helen talking to us about the transportation working group.
Hello, everybody. In case I start speaking low, or a quiet voice, give me a sign to let me know that I'm not speaking loudly enough. So my name is Helen Stay. I'm from Cornell Transportation Services, and my job there is the manager of customer services. Now that Richard mentioned how long this working group has been together, I'd like to mention our working group didn't get started until like this late last spring. So I'm going to put my plug in now. We really are looking for students to join our committee. We have one student from the law school, so I really would like, if anyone's interested in joining, let me know or let Richard know. It's really important to think that we have students on our committee. So let me tell you the rest of the members of our committee. Jana LeMay, she's assistant dean in the graduate school. She's a member. Tanya Husick was a former member. She was our senior transportation planner. She left at the end of October and took another job in Connecticut. Linda Majani from the graduate resident manager at Hasbrook, and Nathan Costella, who's our student from the law school. My supervisor, who's our senior director of transportation services, she is our advisor. So just to give you a summary of what we thought the main topics for our working group action items were. They focused on parking costs and access, transit routes, access to real-time transit information, and a desire for feedback and information for parking and transit issues. So the way I'm going to do this is there were two objectives under the GPCI initiative, and there were action items under each of them. So there's a few that we think we've completed, though we're not really sure, because I think we need, there might be some other issues there that we may not have discerned. We really like to get feedback from students. So I'm going to go through those, one objective and the second objective, and then I guess I'll take questions at the end. So the first objective is graduate professional students should have equal and fair and equitable parking options. So there's a couple things that I think we've completed. I won't read the slides directly. But the first one was offering a cheaper option for commuter students, and specifically targeted was the vet college, because those students often have to be on call. So we have two commuter parking permits. One is about $760, and the cheaper one, which is the B lot, which is right next to the vet college, is about $400 cheaper at about $360. Just to kind of give you a perspective of the number of permits we issue about 1,700 permits a year. Half are residential permits and half are commuter permits. And when you're thinking about 20,000 students, it's a small number when you think about it in the total scheme of things. I think a lot of students either walk, take the bus, or use short-term parking. Of the 531 B permits that we have issued, which is what we have as a lower cost, most of them are issued to professional students. So we have 383 issued professional students and like 125 issued to graduate students. Okay, going on to the next slide. This was an action item saying that we can have short-term accessible parking for students. So we're not really sure what that question was asking, but we sell short-term accessible parking for students. So that's why it's important for us to get another student on to help us discern what the question is really asking. So we feel like it's a completed, but maybe it isn't because there's another issue underlying this. Going over to the next slide. This action item surrounded this parking for people with disabilities for students and also maternity parking accommodation. So just to give you kind of an overview of how we handle any kind of student who has a disability, we always send, and we're trying to take a holistic approach to this. We want all students to go to the Student Disability Services office. Because the student may think, oh, I just need parking, or I just need a bus, but they may need other things, and there might be other resources available to them based on their needs. So we really want them to go to the Student Disability Services office. They can also offer other options besides parking. Sometimes they purchase bus passes for students, and sometimes the student is eligible to use C-Lift. C-Lift is the on-campus accessible transport, and it's free to students. So you have to live within a certain area of campus. It can't be off-campus, pretty much. So we have contacted both Kathy Fagan, Student Disability Services Office, she's the director there, and Nyan Van Fleet and Gannett Health Services, and we are going to partner and collaborate with them to make sure that this information is out there. So students will be told this when they come into those offices, which chances are they may be looking for those types of services. Just to give you what we do for faculty, staff, and students who, women who are expecting a baby, in the last 6 weeks of the pregnancy, we can sell them a parking permit as long as they bring a doctor's note that states what their due date is. If those mothers, and when they come back to work or to class, and they want to continue to nurse their child, we do provide 3 months parking permits to accommodate that. And it's the same for faculty, staff, and students. The next slide. Barbara Romano from the GPCI Housing Working Group approached me and said, there's two action items on our list of action items that really kind of relate to transportation. So she asked me, would we add them to our action items? And so I agreed to do that. The first one, which is related to parking costs for residents of Hasbrook neighborhood and visitor parking there, was similar to one of the ones that we had as an action item, so that was kind of combining those two. The other one that she mentioned was the Ithaca car share card. currently there's an Ithaca car share car in front of RPCC, and I don't know if everybody knows what Ithaca car share is, but it's a community-based car share program where anybody in the community, both residents of Ithaca or people at Cornell, Ithaca College, anywhere, can join this program. And you have access to over 24 cars spread out throughout our community. Of those 24 cars, 9 are on campus or around campus. So what we will do is provide a membership fee. There's two kinds of membership fees. One that's less used car membership fee and a frequent use membership fee. And we'll pay for your less used membership fee. You have to pay for the application fee and the usage charges. So they're interested in moving or getting another car to put in the Hasbrook community. So Ithaca Car Share really manages their cars, and they really base it on financial feasibility. The car is going to be where it's going to pay for itself and get used. So they're a little reluctant to put it in a closed kind of community where other people can't see it, but if there's enough people interested in it, they put it in the Eco Village. I'm not sure if it's still there, but they did do it in other communities. So right now, when we looked at the numbers, we noticed that of the potential 465 drivers in that community, we only have 24 registered car share users. So there would have to be a significant change in usage of the car share, maybe because of where the car is located. So what we decided to do is to get some data. So we're going to do a survey and work with Linda Majani to survey the residents and to see if this is really something they would actually use on a fairly regular basis to allow the car to stay there. Okay. So like I said, we just kind of came together in the latter part of the spring, so this is really a work in progress, and not a lot of decisions have been made. We really need to review and get input from students as well. We may add another couple of questions to our group. So these items on this slide are things that we have not done anything with. We have to discuss, think about their implications, because they may involve reducing or changing the fee amount. Like the first bullet, which is reduce the cost of fees for Hasbrook, Maplewood, and First in Court. Free parking for visitors coming to those locations. The parking options, I'm not really sure what that means, if it's daytime lab needs or nighttime lab needs. I have a feeling it's nighttime lab needs. And there's some unrestricted night, there's some restricted night parking areas I think maybe that graduate students want to park in. Faculty and staff have a ride share program, which is a discounted carpool program, which if two people actually decide to ride together as opposed to getting a parking permit, there's a discount. So that's kind of a discounted fee. We have to kind of figure out the balance of how we can do that program, if we can do that program. And the last bullet was more unrestricted parking. So I just want to make a note about that. With restricted parking, most campus lots that are close to central campus are restricted, but there are many lots that are unrestricted. And for instance, we always tell people, if you're coming onto campus and you can go to a safe place, both garages are unrestricted after 5 on a weekend. So if you are thinking, where am I going to go? You go to one of the garages, likely you'll find a spot after 5. And on the weekends too. So that's kind of the thing to keep in the back of your mind. The other thing I want to mention is our director is fairly new. She came to us on March 31st of last year. She's been here about 9 months now. And, or 10 months now. And she came from Washington State University. She had a long history there in various positions, kind of moving up through the ranks in various positions, and she was the director there for 5 years. So she has a lot of good experience, a lot of good ideas about how to do things maybe differently. She is putting together, or has put together, a transportation task force, which is composed of faculty, staff, and students. They're an advisory group, and there'll be another opportunity for people to offer feedback to members who are on that committee. If you aren't connected with one committee member here, you can also have this task force to use as a place to offer feedback. One of the things I know Bridget Brady is our director, is that when we make changes, especially to fee structure and schedules, we want to kind of look at the whole program comprehensively. So it's always not going to be just one area. We want to kind of look at a comprehensive approach. Okay, going to objective two. Graduate and professional students should and have access to high quality public transportation. That's the next slide. I just want to start that to remind people what all continuing students have and what new and new students have when it comes to university. If you've never been to Cornell, in your first year as a new student, you'll get free TCAT transit privileges in your first year. So if you come in September, it's September through August. If you come in January, it's January through December. And that's the idea behind that, is to introduce you to the bus system. So maybe you would kind of use that as a way of transporting yourself in the future. We want to have people look at commuting in a sustainable way. After your first year, you still continue to get free transit privileges. You get free transit privileges Monday through Friday after 6 p.m. on all TCAT buses and all day Saturday and Sunday. So you continue to get some transit privileges. You can also choose to purchase a transit pass from us, a Cornell Omni Pass. It's $200 a year, and you get access to anywhere TCAT goes Monday through Friday, anytime that they travel. So if you buy that same pass from TCAT, it's about $600. So it is still a subsidized pass. So I just kind of want to make sure that the information is out there. So the first bullet point was there's a request to have representation by the graduate and professional students on the TCAT board. Currently, the TCAT board members are Bridget Brady, our Senior Director for Transportation Services, Kelly Page, Associate Vice President for Student Academic Services and Finance and Administration, and David Howe, Assistant Dean for Finance Administration at Babette College. He just moved to that college about 6 months ago. He was in our Division of Facility Services. As I understand it, the board members really act as a financial kind of overview of that. And I think what people are asking for is more input as to the route and where graduate students may want to catch the bus or take the bus too. So I'm not sure how that was decided, that is who the board members are for Cornell, but that's who they are presently. As I mentioned before, our senior transportation planner left at the end of October. They're still doing a search to replace that position. And when they finally do get that person, hopefully they'll come back on the committee and be able to assist us with some of the issues that have been brought out here. So the last bullet is also increasing transit routes where graduate students may or may want to go, may are going now, and may want to increase the number of buses going there, or increase or create a route that goes there. So one of the things, especially, I don't know if you guys have heard some of the feedback that we've gotten back from riders, especially for Route 81, 82, and 83, so the on-campus routes. TCAT normally relooks at their routes every fall, every winter, spring, and then summer, and they make some changes. This year happens to be a year they made many changes on campus, so there's been a lot of different kinds of feedback. But they're basing their changes based on usage of routes and pickup points. So we all use our cars to ride the bus, so they're collecting that data to see who gets on at what point. So they've been noticing, for instance, in D-Lot, there weren't very many people getting on there as opposed to other places. And so they have limited resources, and they're getting other people saying, wow, we need to have more bus service here. So they're always trying to manage a very limited resource that they have with what's going to help the most amount of people. So these changes that they did, they thought it was going to increase and provide a better service to more people. Of course, the people who don't get to pick up the bus and do that are not very happy. So it's always trying to do a balancing act. And I would encourage you, TCAT is the transit provider for our community. Cornell does not own it. If the college doesn't own it, the city of Ithaca doesn't own it, nor is the town of Ithaca. We are a community-based transit system. So I really encourage you to give feedback directly to them And they've been pretty responsive to people who have contacted them and copied me on it at least. Okay, next slide. The first bullet, we decided at the, I gave a similar presentation at the, in December at the executive, GPCI executive committee, and we decided the first bullet didn't really belong with us. It really wasn't up to us to decide who, how you should send your activity fee. So we are sending it back to the GPCA essay. The second bullet about providing OmniRide before 8 a.m., that still would need a lot of discussion, both for a financial reason about how much that would cost to add that privilege to I guess it would be the free thing that's given to all continuing students, and also capacity issues. That's really a peak time where a lot of faculty staff are coming, so the buses actually even handle it. So that's kind of a multi-issue question. The third bullet, we've been asked to provide more information at the beginning of each semester to new students coming in. We do participate in the new student check-in classes for undergraduates on fall opening day, which is usually the third Friday in August. And that following Monday, we always participate in the graduate information fair. So what we're going to do is we're going to reach out to three professional colleges, law, Vet College and JGSM, and see if we can be incorporated into their orientation program so we can provide some information there. The fourth bullet, park and ride. Most park and rides are in the perimeter of a community and usually have bus service coming in directly from there. The park and rides are not owned by TCAP. Most of them are owned by a town and municipality. I think there's some fire stations. I think the one park and ride they had that was a privately owned land, the person took it back and said they didn't want to use it as a park and ride anymore. So I think it says park and ride on campus. I don't think we would have a park and ride on campus. We do have perimeter lots that students can park in, and faculty staff can get the bus in. I think we would be probably looking at parking rides further out where people wouldn't bring their car all the way in and create that additional traffic. But still for discussion. Bicycles on buses. So I don't know if you know, but all TCAT buses have two bike racks on each of the buses. I did call Doug Schwartz down at TCAT. He's a service development manager. And he had told me that put a third rack on any of the buses is not, it would be an issue, it would be problematic in the radius they need to make those turns. He has heard of a vendor that does create a rack that has three slots for bikes, but it would mean replacing all the bike racks and all the buses. And so it's always a management of resources. Do we do the bike rack, or do we try to increase service or improve routes? So it's kind of a TCAP kind of question as to how we go forward and feedback from the users of those bike racks. Okay, and the last slide I have is talking about TCAP and the trip planner and their app. So I did talk to Doug Schwartz, he's the service development manager, and he had said they have put an RFP out for a trip planner. They have gotten vendors who have responded. They plan to make a decision, and hopefully in their fiscal year is a calendar year, so in the first part of the calendar year. They expect the testing and the implementation to take a year. It's pretty complicated, according to him. And they hope to also have the app working as well in this calendar year. So those are things that are going to happen soon. So that's all I have. I'll take some questions and try to take notes if anybody wants to ask anything. Yes.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. A couple of questions. First of all, you mentioned that there's a possibility for people with disability or expecting mothers to purchase a temporary pass. Can I talk about it?
Right now, I don't know if this is up to date here, but for instance, if the 6-week temporary for a mother who is expecting a child for central campus term would be $84.
$84. The other question I had about the question of whether or not our 2 days will be used for OMUA, I was wondering if your office could provide an estimate of how much that would be, because that would definitely help us in whether or considering whether or not we should discuss that with your application fee.
So if you purchase an OMUA pack, it's $200. And that's, like I said, if you buy it from TCAT, it'd be $600. So it is, it's still subsidized. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I can't say that for sure, but I can give you the cost of the OMUA pack right now.
Has there been any thought for the meal and taxes that there might be people, there might not be enough room for the vet students who was originally for to purchase passes, because slowly it's getting, it's more full this year than it was last year.
So one of the things that we did change, I think it was last year, is we also offer the campus bus, which is the executive coach that goes back to New York City to our offices and our college down in New York City. And we're one of the bus stops where people could pick up the buses at the questioning center. But because it had grown, there were so many people parking there, it was pushing out the people who were actually going to the questioning center. And so that was moved to Leela. So that, I think, probably impacted it some. Because of some of the bus stop changes, I think people are moving to the other O lots, the staff are at least. So I think it should free up more room in the B lots. So I think it might be better as a result of the bus stop not, or the bus is not going to B lots. But I think we're still pretty good. I think we're still pretty good for a while, unless we have this huge surge of people that come in. Yes?
One more comment in regard to the 81 and B lot. Certainly the route that they're taking now doesn't cut down on the mileage that they were running. They were around the perimeter of B lot instead of Pruitt. And they're only doing one stop there. So I'm curious if these are one, you know, what the economics of that is, and two, if there was at least any consideration of going through B lot at peak hours, so I would say 7:30 to 8:30 9, and again, it's 4 to 5 or whatever. That seems to be when peak rights are walking. I can understand it's cutting down for the middle of the day, but it seems kind of silly to have a commuter lot that it would serve by a bus.
So we did talk to them, and the bus is going, it has a pickup point as it's going towards campus. Right by the, there's a pull-off there on the south end. It's a drive to go between B-Lot and the hospital. The drive, there's a stop there right by the small animal clinic, and it is picking up people at peak hours in the morning, and it's dropping off people opposite that. So there was a consideration. It's about 45 minutes in the morning and about 45 minutes in the evening. And if you look at their bus schedule and also online, winter and spring one, it has that schedule on there. But if you have some ideas, I really encourage you to write to TCAT. They that's how they find out where things work or don't work. I mean, some people, they were on a tight schedule because they took an out-of-county bus in, and they had to get to campus and connect with an 81 to take them on a small talk to make it to work on time. So they tweaked some of the schedules to make that work for people. So they have been responsible.
We have time for two more questions. So.
Yeah, but it is a ghost town there. We used to be much more crowded over at Maplewood, and I don't know if it's students choosing not to bring a car. There's more international students. We have a car share car right across the street, and we've been encouraging people not to bring cars. So the combination is pretty low, I think, usage of that parking lot. So I'm not sure what would happen there. I think it depends what goes.
I mean, it's TCAT, because you're right, a lot of those people are international students.
Yeah.
Because
right. But if they take down Maplewood, they're not going to be there. I mean, we should go out and create another burden somewhere else. Are you thinking that way?
Yeah, yeah, we're working on it.
Yeah, so I don't know where their housing may be relocated, because I don't know what the housework is at this point, at First and Court, if they're at capacity or not. Something will have to kind of, you know, I know Barbara, and she's mentioned that before, Barbara Mott is in the housing area, and I've definitely talked to her about it and see if they have any concerns of where they're thinking about putting people, so I could definitely put that on our watch list.
Last question.
So one of the parking issues that I've had is not so much day long parking but short term parking for a couple of hours on campus and meter parking in particular.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you could talk a little about the decision to change the parking in Buller Street Hall from 25 cents per 10 minutes for 2 hours to, I think it's $3 an hour now.
Yeah, we had that lot wasn't being used as we had intended. There was a lot of people just paying to park there and parking all day. And so it's such a high, we really want a high turnover there because the student's office there, the campus store, there's eating places, I mean, the net's right there. So we really wanted to have a high turnover. And it was just too hard for us to enforce the 2 hour limit. And we've got the same people parking. It was just, it didn't seem like it was working. So we thought, all right, there's a higher demand here for this area. And if people really want to park here, then there's a higher cost for that. So that was the idea behind that. It wasn't working the way we wanted it. We want a high turnover. We want people to be able to park there to do their short errands and not park there all day because they happen to work in that building.
All right. So thank Helen for coming in and our questions. And just to repeat a point made earlier, if you are interested in these issues, then they are looking for students to participate in the working group. So I encourage all of you to contact me, contact Helen directly, if you would like to have a voice if these action items are discussed. So
my email is hx21@cornell.edu.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right, so next we will have Jan Allen talking to us about the Sense of Community Working Group.
Okay. I got my question answered. So thank you for having me. I apologize in advance because I chair or co-chair three of the eight groups. So I'm here for three of the four next meetings. So I'll try to be brief because you're going to get tired of me because one a month ago. So close your eyes. Close your eyes. Oh, where is the truck? I'm going to throw it. Close your eyes for a second. I'm going to say something and I want somebody to tell me what comes to your mind when I say sense of community. Maybe I should say it more pleasantly. Sense of community. Okay, open your eyes. What did you think of? No, I took that this afternoon. Okay, yeah, I've only been here 2.5 years, but I think sense of community and I think Big Red Barn. I really do. I'm waiting for it to be decommissioned and I actually want to move in there and live in there. But it's not going to be decommissioned. Don't misinterpret that. What else do you think of when you hear sense of community?
Friendship.
Belonging. Ooh, I like that one. What else?
Interactions with neighbors.
Okay. Food? Works for me. What, coffee?
Yeah.
Coffee? Connectedness. So thank you. For the first two meetings of our Sense of Community work group, we did that exercise. Because when you look at some of the topics of the other eight work groups, there's housing. And I'm not going to ask you, what do you think of when you think of housing? Or transportation. But Sense of Community is probably one of the more amorphous multiply defined domains or areas for the GPCI document, meaning we get to have a lot of fun in our work group with this topic. So what I'm going to do is share with you briefly some of the progress we've made. I want to ask you some questions, and then I want to seek input. Am I changing this or you? It's really simple. So in the first year I was here, I carried around the Graduate School Code of Legislation, a graduate school protocol guide so I could learn really what I was supposed to do my first year of my job, and I carried around the LGCI document. But you often find me still carrying this around and making reference to it. But in case you don't have it memorized yet, the first objective presented to us by the hardworking folks who wrote this is to consider ways to improve opportunities for meaningful interaction and interdisciplinary collaboration across the broad graduate and professional student community. And one of the things that our group has pointed to that is already new, we're not taking credit for this, how many of you have participated in the Works in Progress program? How many, somebody raise their hand maybe tentatively? How many of you know about the Works in Progress program? It is coming, we'll get to the marketing recommendation later. It's coming out of the School of Engineering. College of Engineering, the Multicultural Awareness Council, which is referred to as MAC, for graduate students get to present their research, their work in progress, for the experience of presenting to a broad interdisciplinary group and giving feedback. And we think this is a perfect reflection of one of the things that should be going on this campus, and we'll just see that it's marketed to everybody else. Also, how many of you know about the 3-minute thesis? Thank you. How many of you have recently done something for 3 minutes and somebody handed you $1,500? Yeah, that's what I thought. So we are hosting through preliminary rounds in March and a final competition in April, an opportunity for students to present their research, go over 3 minutes and you're disqualified. But the first place winner gets $1,500, second place winner gets $1,000, and if you pack the rooms with your friends and family, you can win the People's Choice Award and get $500. Nobody's paying me $500 for 3 minutes, or even an hour. How about a day? No, not even a day. So I encourage you all to either decide to participate this year, we'll do this annually, or sponsored by the graduate school, the preliminaries are held at the Big Red Barn, but also consider doing it another year because it's a fantastic way to feature your research to an interdisciplinary audience. And if you've never Googled 3-minute thesis online, some of the YouTube videos out there are absolutely amazing. So if you are in a competition, go to our website. We have some links to some of the previous winners in other places. One of the things that was recommended to us is that we enhance the marketing of what's already going on campus as examples of these opportunities. And clearly, one of the things our working group spent some time talking about is our commitment to looking at a number of very effective and high-quality opportunities and activities rather than simply looking at the quantity and thinking we're doing better if each year we have more and more and more. Because one of the things we've heard from students on our work group is that in some of their fields, they actually had to cut the number of events and activities by sometimes up to a half to get the participation level that they wanted because students were saying, there's just too much for us to do. And so what we are working on are ways to enhance the marketing of what's out there in addition to creating some new opportunities. But please know that's an important thing for our group. And then the question I have for you, one of the action items given to our work group was to identify ways to incentivize students and faculty to develop novel and innovative partnerships and collaborations. And our group's response was, this is vague. We don't know what this means. Do some of you have examples of ways your fields or the departments associated with your field provide incentives to faculty and students to do this, to create these opportunities, these innovative collaborations and partnerships? And maybe some of you wrote this, and we'll tell us what you had in mind.
I'm not looking box factor, but There is the Action Center has a grant that is perfectly awarded to students to form collaborative associations with other researchers in different departments on campus. So that's an incentive.
Okay. So really financial incentive. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have an idea you want to share? Okay. And I'll give you time to share ideas about any of these or anything related to these at the end as well. Objective number two, to support programming events and activities that encourage social cohesion, connectedness, we said connectedness earlier, and communication. One of the ideas that we are exploring, I'd love to do this, I want to get your input. How many of you are a member of not just a member, but part of the leadership, the executive board of an organization on campus other than GPSA? So within your field, your professional society or discipline, a cultural group, some other kind of group? But raise your hands higher so I can see. So that looks like at least half of you. What we would like to do is offer, we'll get lots of input from those of you who raised your hand as well as others in GPSA before we launch into this, because it would be an investment of time and resources, including financial resources. But we want to invite the executive board, the leadership of graduate student organizations on campus to say a 1 to 2 day or weekend leadership retreat where we offer you some leadership training but have lots of time over that 1 day, 2 days, however much time you have to give us, to interact with each other about more collaborations between student groups. I mean, as I understand the MAC, the Multicultural Awareness Council in Engineering, it brings together leadership of different groups, but over this opportunity to present work in progress of your research. And we want to do something that's more open, at the beginning at least, to consider all the ways our student organizations that exist and are working very hard on missions and their own visions to collaborate. Kind of yay, nay, how many of you think that's an idea worth exploring? Thank you. You're invited to the retreat. Okay. So we will continue to explore and develop that. And then we may come back to you and say, when in the world do you have time to come to a retreat? And that's when it will be. Okay. Another good action item from this group was to include graduate student organizations as part of the resource fair at the new student orientation right before the start of the year. And we actually do it. We invite probably about 90 organizations, including some of the student groups, at least the ones that we're aware of and that we think will resonate with the largest number of students as possible. And the first 65 groups that accept, we have space for about 65. But that includes, transportation and parking, it includes Gannett, it includes dining, it includes all the offices on campus that we think have information or something else to provide to incoming students. So when you, as president or leadership of a student organization, get that email from us in the spring, just reply yes right away to reserve your table, because we do fill up the space that we have available in new student orientation and can't take everybody who eventually says they would like to participate. But we're doing this, and we'll try to do it to an even larger degree of new student orientation. Still objective two. It was recommended that we have an orientation for students who matriculate in the spring, and we've been doing that for 2 years now. Last week, Tuesday, we had 48 of our incoming graduate and professionals, 44 pre-registered, we had 48 show up, and we had a very lively discussion around just about 6 tables of incoming students. And we have done, I think we've sent out the evaluation for that group. And so we hope that that's meeting what the GPCI document has recommended. There are opportunities to expand that by larger participation. For example, we don't do a resource fair for those 48 students. But as maybe the word gets out that this is really helpful, that more of the incoming students will participate. And we can expand that as well. But thank you for that recommendation. Okay, objective number three, support and encourage personal development and growth. One of the recommendations had to do with, as a Cornell community, doing more to recognize the achievements of graduate students. And one of the things that our working group has taken on is to compile a list of all the Cornell and field-based or department-based awards and recognitions. Teaching awards, service awards, research awards, presentation, conference awards. We're going to compile a list of those. And then if there are gaps that exist, and I don't know if when this action item was written, there were specific gaps in mind, but we want to compile a list. And one of the things the graduate school started doing this year, if you look on our website, there's a little button you click where you can write to us. I think the button is labeled Kudos, or I think that's what we decided to name it. But if you get a publication, if you get an award, you get an external fellowship, but if something great happens to you that we could share with the larger community, we want you to self-report that. Don't be shy. Don't be modest. We may not hear from your field, or we may not find about it. Although, in today's Chronicle of Higher Education, a Cornell student is recognized with about 8 other students, I think, around the country for winning the Patricia Frost Award. That person's not in this room, I think. You're going to have to stand and give applause for you if you are. We want to know about things like this, and we feature them every Monday in our graduate school announcements. But our working group is compiling a list of all the awards that are out there, and then maybe we can share that list in some way with GPSA, and you can help us identify where the gaps are in recognizing what our graduate students are doing. Okay. Objective number four, improve integration and communication across departments and units. One of the things our group is examining is whether there's room for additional journal clubs, reading groups that can be interdisciplinary. How many of you are in a field that has a journal club? How many of you don't know what a journal club is? One of you who participate in a journal club, tell us. What do you do? You read journal articles and you discuss the research that's presented there, particularly that may relate to your own research. So we're exploring the idea that there may be something interdisciplinary. I thought about, after doing, dissertation boot camp, proposal boot camp, thesis boot camp, I know at least one of our boot campers are in here. I thought about, students always say, what's a really good book to read about writing my dissertation? And my answer is always, don't read books about writing your dissertation. You write. I will read the book. I will tell you what's in the book. But this last group of boot campers, particularly those who were in the proposal writing stage, okay, maybe if you're a PhD student and you're just writing a proposal, maybe you have time to read a book because it's probably going to be 2 or 3 years till you finish, and the rest of you don't have time to read a book about how to write a dissertation. But we have thought about on some of the professional development topics, like the job search, writing and publishing, how to make presentations, doing something like a journal club or a very small book or chapters from a book, and seeing if graduate students would like to come together over a reading they've done and then talk about that skill development. One of the things that at least students in our group believe is that if you are looking at the university calendar, and if you are reading the graduate school announcements that come out every Monday night, how many of you receive the graduate school announcements? How many of you then read them? You know, the thing that strikes me is how much stuff is in there. I mean, the complaint is they're too long, but they're too long with a list of opportunities for graduate students, fellowships you can apply for, workshops you can attend, but we consider that our method of communication with graduate students. Every Monday night, we send out graduate school announcements. Some of you may be also on a brand new listserv that started in the fall that Michelle Cox, the director of the new English Language Support Office, created. Although she had a little moment of mismanagement of the list, and when something went to everybody that shouldn't have gone to everybody, she had dozens and dozens of students unsubscribing, And so some of you who maybe, did you unsubscribe?
Yeah, I mean, I think all the international students are added on by default, and then everyone can email each other.
Yeah, and she fixed that glitch, but not before a lot of students unsubscribe. But if you're an international student, then announcements just for you come out on a, not even a, it's not like every Monday, it's whenever there's anything to announce.
Something like a Monday, I don't know exactly.
Yeah, and in fact, the handouts I brought tonight are about all the new offerings for international students, which probably would be more appropriate for the time I talk about the International Diversity Working Group, but those were hot off the press today, so I wanted to bring copies for you. But many of our students believe they were getting enough emails from the graduate school. Did I say enough or too many? Enough emails from the graduate school, and that there were announcements going out. And we really do try to not overload you with that. So if you'll just stay subscribed to the Monday, I don't know if you can get out of it. I really don't. So I'm not suggesting you can get out of that. But at least look at it, because that's our one avenue for communicating with everybody. So let me ask you what questions you have for me, what else, you know, your input into what else you want this group to consider as part of Census Community, knowing we have a good working list from the GPCI document.
How do you subscribe to the graduate? Where is the professional schools just not count under the graduate?
Are you in Johnson?
No.
Vet school. So you PhD student?
Yeah.
You DVM
student? Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, let me double check on that, because we want anybody who wants to be part of it to get the
yeah.
In the what?
Spirit.
In the spirit of connection. That's going to be my new word. So everybody, when you email tonight, use the word connectedness in any email. Don't get in trouble, you. Try to use it. Let me double check, because it may mean that we just need to reach out to the professional schools, because I have heard this from some of the students in Johnson as well. Well, last year the GPCA president was an MBA student in Johnson, and I'm not sure she was getting the graduate school email.
They don't get it.
And so we added her.
The professional schools prevent that from sending an email to them. And there is something. There's something.
I'm not that, very connected.
Yeah, I mean, there's something. So you can sign up. They can sign up, but it's slightly not sure how they can sign up.
Okay, we'll figure it out. I'll report back to you guys. Yeah, I mean, we all have a different level of tolerance for how much email we think is a lot, right? What else? Questions? Input? Oh.
I recently found out that we started from the Archaeology Department wrote on the Senate, flower resistant organic dye. We're not allowed to put flower resistant. That's what we do. What do you mean allow? By who? Departments doesn't allow, you're not allowed to use your department for flowers to let it only dye.
Way of supporting graduate students. But we do the same thing in the graduate school. If it's a purpose for which the university policy would prevent us using university money in that way, then we can shift it. And I realize that's different when employees are doing it in graduate school. But let me at least get the policy, and then I guess there could be a request for reexamination of the policy, or at least somebody could explain. Because you submitted the policy because there was some big problem, and they realized we need a policy about it. So let me see what I can find out.
Yeah.
What else?
Two more questions, please.
But that's a good question. We never thought of that in terms of the
Do you have an email address?
I do? Yes. It's on the very last slide, and it's jan.allen, A-L-L-E-N, at cornell.edu.
I just have a picture of the Bigfoot Farm, and I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts about the pieces of the community going forward. I know that I personally know a lot of other people don't feel like it's really a sticky crisis. That especially during the day of just another dining hall, and if there was some sort of plan to build a
Exactly. And in fact, there's another working group called the Graduate Instructional Student System. Guess who chairs that? I was thinking about that. In fact, Richard asked me if I was present on that tonight, and I said that there's a survey going out, and I really want to wait. Hopefully, the survey results will be back. And I do know that the big part of the survey, though, is about the food structures provided there, with there having been lots of suggestions and ideas about could be a coffee shop, more of a cafe, what could we do to make it more of a graduate professional student space. And there seems to be agreement that we don't want to post signs saying no undergraduates allowed. Because then what if they did that with the industry, you know? I mean, what if everybody started framing their space in a way that it wasn't a big Cornell community? That's one of the nice things about Cornell. Some of you have heard me talk about the other places I've been, and I've heard me say Cornell is the best managed and best organized university I've ever been at. And truly, I think there's such a sense of community here already, and the fact that we're doing even more to enhance and foster that. But part of the, so how many of you know that from 8 to 11 every morning, Monday through Friday, I didn't have to ask a question. You are 8 to 11, Monday through Friday, when classes are in session, graduate students can come and write the upper level of the Bigfoot Farm. We call it a write-in, and you get free coffee and free tea while you're being productive. Don't worry, I don't walk around and snatch your coffee away if you're not being productive. But it's a way for you to use the Bigfoot Farm also as an academic community. But you have to clear out by 11 because everybody comes in to eat. Right now, the food service model at the Big Red Barn is built on the fact that it's open to the Cornell community for breakfast and lunch. But part of the reason for doing this survey and then the work group, as well as Cornell Dining and the Big Red Barn director and staff, will be looking at the results of the survey to make decisions about changing food service, options for changing food service, and even at that point, redesigning the interior of the Big Red Barn. The tables have been there for 100 years, I actually think it's 50 years, because they're so sturdy. The chairs have to be replaced about once every 20 years. I don't know what you guys are doing with the chairs. But the tables are really sturdy. But still, there may be some, how many of you are design students? How many of you are not design students, but you have a better sense of design than what the Big Red Barn would suggest that, you know, went into it 50 years ago. So we're looking at the redesign and the food service and kind of an overhaul of that based on your input. So when you get that survey, please fill it out. The end?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Richard.
And yeah, there's email address up there. So let's thank Jan for the presentation. Yeah, and she will be back. So the GPCI is the full document is online, and I will send it out ahead of the next meeting. highlighting which groups will be presenting so that we get more people to read it and have an understanding of it. But I encourage you all to find it. You can find it on our WordPress site, cornellgpsa.com, and you can find the full GPCI there, and I encourage you all to read it and learn about that action plan. So, moving on. All right, so reports, offices, committee updates, running a little bit late, so I ask that you keep reports as brief as possible. For the executive committee, nothing to report, but I will say that the sustainability committee will be having its first meeting hopefully this week, so having a bit of a problem getting a room, so it might be pushed to next week. But sustainability committee will be meeting soon. I have several people who are interested in joining, so that is now up and running. For operations and staffing, we need to find someone to fill our slot on the trustee nominating committee. This is a very pressing committee appointment that we need to make. This committee is charged with nominating the candidates for the elected trustee positions. So the student elected trustee, the employee elected trustee, though I'm not sure if they are being elected this year, and also the faculty trustees. And this nominating committee is in charge with helping get the election process set up. The main commitment's all in February. It's only a couple meetings, maybe 5 to 6 hours of total commitment. So please, if you're interested, come to me after the meeting. And please consider it's a great way to interact with people from, you know, the employees and faculty. I find that these kinds of committees that bring people from all the different communities at Cornell are very interesting to sit on. And, of course, there will also be undergraduate students on that committee. But I hope that doesn't deter people. So, next we'll go to appropriations. Sid.
Basically, we've met with all the student groups, all the bilateral groups, more or less, and we're collecting information from them, and that will hopefully be summarized in the next month or so. We will be going up for the new faculty again in the fall, and so the applications will be due sometime in the end of the semester. But there is one question I had to ask. I don't know if it makes sense. But so historically, we used this graduate student activity survey or something like that to find out what groups are actually being used. Like, for instance, what is the usage rate and things like that. And this hasn't been done since 2010, I believe. So we don't have information that the appropriations committee can use. I don't know if there is a GPSA actor or anything on that.
Next up, communications.
My name is John, I'm making a mistake. I'm doing the buzz for our newsletter, and we're doing the once a month to come out to the first week of the month, and I'm interviewing as part of the buzz to increase awareness of GPSA and participation. I'm interviewing students from around campus who are graduating from professional students once a month. And so if you know anybody who you think might be good for an interview or might be outgoing, please contact me. My email is jdg288. And this past month, I interviewed Dusty Madison from physics. And before that, I interviewed Claire, she's the last one now, from Vet School. She was fun. So please look for the buzz coming out. Look for the interview and spread that out.
Thank you. Finance Commission? Right. Advocacy.
We've almost finished reserving a spot and a time for designing steps this semester, and what we really need now is more people to join our group and have a plan rather than and some ideas for what we want representatives to be talking about. So if you know issues that you really want us to be dealing with, and talking about, please come talk to the answer and try to inform me.
Okay. Faculty Awards? Diversity International Students?
Happy New Year, everybody. A couple items. First grade next year with you, Jared Mannis, who's currently director of the either of these programs in engineering. She's been doing the ACD for inclusion engagement for graduate school. She's great at transition to the space of your time now. Your transition will occur later this spring. So I'll be inviting these managers to speak to us about her role later this semester and potential ways we can collaborate and the staff. I'd like to thank Christine Davey for participating in hiring the committee. I'm exciting with Pop Group dinner.
And finally, programming board. Thank you very much. All right. And we're almost back on time. So with that, we'll move right into new business, which is elections. So first election is for a voting member at large. For those field reps considering this position, I would encourage you to run for this if you are interested in the vice president of operations position. And so I will now open the floor to nominations. So first, the only difference between a voting member and a field representative is voting members vote on resolutions. Aside from that, there's pretty much no distinction between the two. So, I open the floor now to nominations and volunteers for the position of voting member. Pedro. Any others? Seeing none, I will then ask for unanimous consent to elect Teja as a new voting member. Are there speech? Okay. Give us
I'm going to give you a short preview. I want to run for the PO as well.
He serves already as our university assembly representative, so I will say that in favor of him. Are there any other? Okay. So, I'll ask again for unanimous consent to elect Teja as a voting member. Are there any objections? All right. Seeing none, congratulations, Teja. You're now a voting member of the GPSA. All right. Next will be the position of Finance Commission Chair. Are there any nominations or volunteers?
I nominate.
All right. Okay. two glowing nominations. Are there any other nominations, or do you accept the nomination? Okay. Are there any other nominations or volunteers? All right. Seeing none, I'll ask for unanimous consent to elect Huang as the Finance Commission Chair. Is there any objection? Seeing none, congratulations. You're now our new Chair of the Finance Commission. And now, finally, Vice President of Operations. So, I will now open the floor to nominations and volunteers. Yes, this is restricted to voting members only. Officially, all positions are restricted only to voting members. However, in the case a voting member may not be found, a field representative will then be chosen. In the event a field representative is not chosen, it will go to the graduate community as a whole. So, but first we start amongst the voting members. All right, Teja, are there any others? No. Okay, so are there any other nominations or volunteers?
All right. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah. I am Taylor, I'm currently on the University Center, working closely with the Infrastructure Committee. I've spoken to that committee mostly with looking at transportation, being sustainable, and how to improve our sustainability goal. That's fundamentally the two most topics that are important. Other than that, at the UAB, we've also been very involved in reading speech and mostly in terms of the proposed amendment that we're thinking about, or that we're thinking about voluntary advance mode. I think it was a part of our civility versus other discourse. I just like to say that I've already been very clear that I'm against the addition to all the fund up to most of the members of the people who are going on at the UAB. That is what I hear now. Also, I think you are thinking the two main priorities that I would be focusing on would be to increase representation here. I've said this before in this assembly that the number of vacancies that I see on the time sheet always maintains in that. I think we can try to improve on that, mostly by trying to get to individual fields. Whether they want to not participate, I guess that's up to them. That I guess we should kind of focus on some effort. Secondarily, I think the second goal would be to have some sort of leadership dependency, I guess. I feel like there are a lot of people here who I know without which GPSA would not be safe. Which is fantastic, because I think how much effort they put in. But I feel that is not a sustainable model for us. And I don't think you said enough, but I think that other area I think we should focus on to have some sort of.
Okay. So, if there are no other nominations or volunteers, then I'll ask for unanimous consent to elect Teja as our Vice President of Operations for the spring semester. Are there any objections? All right. Seeing none, congratulations, Teja. Okay, so with that, we will then move into open forum. And is Mia here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi, I'm the music sales rep, and I just wanted to speak to you guys briefly about Gannett's Care Counseling Program here. They have a special section of the counselor training program specifically for graduate students this semester. And the training program runs for 12 weeks, starting 7 p.m.
Part
proposed essentially to have with the undergrad, and understandably, undergrad students don't feel completely comfortable going and speaking to an undergrad, particularly if you're a university student. And so we addressed this in the mental health section of the GPI. And so I wanted to bring this up again, because I think it'd be really great if, you know, any of us, I'm definitely volunteering, I'm in the program, or if anybody else in your field could try out, you know, we can really try and increase the amount of graduate students here in the field and make this service more easy to use for graduate students. So I think it's a really valuable service that has to organize it. So that's it. If you want any more info, just email it ears@cornell.edu. And then just very quickly, whilst you're on the subject of health and wellness, I discovered this weekend, Brian kind of didn't call my attention to this, that there's a service I think is new this year, the membership of CHIP, whereby if you have a membership to Cornell Gym and you go 100 times within the whole year, you can get, or if you go 50 times within 6 months, you can get reimbursement for half of your gym membership. If you go 100 times within the whole year, you can get all reimbursed. And if you're off campus, this also works for other gyms. Unfortunately, it's not eligible for off campus gyms in Ithaca. So if you're away from Ithaca, say you're doing research and, you know, worried about high cost of gyms outside of or abroad, then you can apply to get up to $200 per semester reimbursed. So none of my friends seem to have heard about this, so I only just heard about it. So again, we talked to the GPI about trying to make the gym more affordable for our students. I think it's a really great program. So it's on the GNET website under our SHIP benefits under the special mentor program. So if you want to check that out, there's a form you have to like fill out. And quickly, like, if you have a machine, you track how many times you've been to the gym, like there is actually a there to show how many times you've been to the gym. So you can make sure you get up to a good pace.
Okay.
Not to suggest anything, but I get one thing to show. I'm going into the gym. Yes, you do that.
Brought up at the vet school that we're hoping to work out some sort of resolution for is pets being allowed in housing if you're going to be like a peer resident houser person. Yeah, so it's always advertised to us as a potential job opportunity and says that, I mean, you know, you can live for a lot cheaper, and it's drawn a lot of vet school attention, but most vet students have pets. So we were going to see if we could look into changing that or ways around it. So if anyone is interested in that or has any connections to people who might be better at handling that than us just researching things on Cornell's website, come find me.
Okay. Anything else?
Can I?
Okay.
So right now, the Office of Diversity and Inclusion is offering a competition to collect a new graphic design. The Open Doors Graphic Design Competition, and it's a new representation of Cornell commitment to diversity and inclusion. The winning logo will be revealed in April of targeting, and I'm coordinating a panel of judges. So I need a few volunteers to serve on the panel. It won't require a face-to-face meeting. I hope to do a call survey and possibly a phone conference. So I'd like to ask that you email me on Quora. It's cmb466@cornell.edu. And if I don't get enough volunteers from people in this room, then I'll ask you to forward up the request to your field. So if you could email me with the link if you're interested, that'd be great.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Then I'll wish the Indian members present a happy Republic Day. And is there a motion to adjourn? All right. Is there a second? All right. We're adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.